And speaking of school board, the superintendent of public instruction is an elected office. He's on the ballot in the November 6th election, and early voting starts in Marion County on October the 8th, by the way. Dr. Tony Bennett is the Republican incumbent for superintendent of public instruction, and he joins me live. Welcome. Good to see you.
It is always good to be with you. We missed you at the roundtable this week.
We were at the Black MBA convention.
So okay. You know what, Amos? I'll do for you what you did for me. You asked me about going to Black Expo, and I said I was visiting my daughter-in-law because my son-in-law is overseas defending our country, and you said, I'll give you a pass.
That's right. That's a pass.
So we're.
I was with educated.
How's that?
That's right. Educated African Americans. I got a first standard question we have for anybody whose name is on the ballot this year. Why are you running again?
Well, Amos, I think first we have, in my opinion, we have spent 4 years truly transforming the way Indiana delivers education. Indiana has become, in many ways, the envy of the country in regard to what it has been willing to do regarding around choices for parents, teacher effectiveness, accountability for schools, the third grade reading initiative. And then we have some incredible, and you and I have shared these before on this show, we've got some outstanding results. I mean, our student performance and our state's assessments, those are up 8%. AP, advanced placement. Number two in the nation in improvement and advanced placement in the United States. And three, our graduation rates are at an all-time high. So I think we have an incredible story to tell, and I believe that we have just begun to see where Indiana can go, and I look forward to and would appreciate the opportunity to continue to take us to the next level.
If you're reelected, what's next? Or is this, if you're reelected, an opportunity to absorb the change that's been done?
Well, let me ask you, Amos, that's a great question because everyone seems to want to ask that question. And I say that reform is never finished. Results are never final and reform is never finished. I do think we will have to go back and look at some things we've done and maybe tweak those. But let me give you a hot-button topic that I think may be near and dear to your heart. If absorbing and kind of taking a breather, as someone had mentioned to me earlier today, does that mean we don't pursue early childhood education? Should we just give what we've done a breather and not do that and maybe not pursue that? Should we not pursue the really tough things we need to do, like tackle school funding? And see, I believe that you shouldn't take a breather because I think our kids are much too valuable to us to take a breather. I don't think this is about the comfort of adults absorbing anything in the state house. I think Indiana has momentum. I think education is like everything else. It is a game of momentum. And I think we have momentum, and I don't think we should relinquish that momentum.
The data that was released last week by the Census American Community Survey not only showed that Indiana had the 13th lowest percentage of 3- and 4-year-olds enrolled in some form of schooling, whether it's Head Start or daycare or what have you, but Indianapolis had the 5th lowest percentage of any of the 25 largest cities in the country in terms of our 3- and 4-year-olds in some types of schooling. But given how tight money is, and you know, come on, you're running as a Republican. Nobody likes to say the T word. We're, you know, raising taxes. How do we fund early childhood with the kind of fiscal restraints we have?
Well, first, Amos, I think we as a community of educators, I put you in that category because I think your passion for education is equal to just about any educator I know. But I think as a community of educators, we have to force ourselves to think differently about funding. You know, if you're asking me, do I think in these economic times that we can just take a sum of money and dump it into the budget for early childhood education? No, but I think our economic condition is such that we can look at how we target funding for early childhood education. But Amos, I need to say this because you mentioned as a Republican. Well, as a fiscal conservative, whether you want to use Republican Democrat, anything, it doesn't matter. That's inconsequential to me. But as a fiscal conservative, I don't believe that we should spend tax dollars without getting quality in return. So I think within the frameworks that we've talked about in terms of the choice that is already a foundation now in Indiana's education landscape, mm-hmm. accountability, which is a foundation in Indiana's education landscape, standards, which are foundations in Indiana's education landscape, I think we should be looking at how we look at our state's education budget and deliver that so that we start getting the results we want to get.
Does that mean providing some minimum standards for what daycare ought to be teaching so that when that child hits 5 or 6 and gets either a public school or a private school, hits kindergarten, they're meshing with the standards that the State Department of Education is – first of all, are there standards for kindergarten?
Well, yeah. You know, Amos, first, it's really funny you say that because – you asked that. Because I would venture to say of the 291 superintendents we talked to across the state, most of those would tell you that guys who have hair color that is roughly equal to yours and mine,
mm-hmm.
That what you and I were learning in first grade is now being pushed down to kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a question about that. A great deal of that is happening. So yes, I mean, I think we have to ask ourselves, you've never heard me come on your show and say that less school is better.
Mm-hmm.
I will always be consistent. And so I think if we are going to have this robust discussion about early childhood education, we have to have it within the context of how do we build our fiscal policies so that we get what we expect out of it.
Does that also mean responsibly dealing with child care ministries? In other words, respecting faith-based institutions to be able to create a school similar to how Heritage Christian and the Catholic schools and Jewish schools and others can operate, K-12 schools that incorporate their religious heritage and tradition as well as meet state standards. Does that mean that our daycare ministries need to come to those levels?
Well, I think what you're asking, and I'm going to ask you to correct me if I mm-hmm. didn't understand you correctly, okay? But I think what you're asking is very similar to the question we ask regarding the voucher program.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, are schools willing to meet certain standards to receive state money?
Because everyone that's participating in the voucher system must adhere to State Department of Education guidelines, rules and regulations and standards. And there are some private schools that have elected not to accept the voucher. I think the international school, I think, is still not there. I'm not sure. Oaks Academy came up on the show the other day as to whether they were in the system or out of the system. And I can't remember whether they are or not.
So, but what you're talking about, Amos, when we talk about this early childhood discussion, notice where you and I started this discussion and notice to where it is gone. And that is, there are a number of policy discussions around early childhood education that are much more broad than saying, let's just take a sum of money and dump it into the system and say, now we're funding early childhood education. Because that's not good policy, and that is not consistent with what we've done in the past to improve education the way we have the last 4 years.
239-1310, 239-1310. This afternoon's name is Dr. Tony Bennett, is the incumbent superintendent of public instruction. He is running for re-election. In the election, let's start today with Reverend Day. Hi there.
Hi there, Amos, and how you doing, Dr. Bennett?
Great to talk to you this morning, Reverend Day. It's afternoon, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Amos Brown, I first want to thank you very much for moderating the Concerned Clergy efforts to educate the community on TIF last Saturday. I mean, you did an excellent job.
Thank you.
And so many people walked away saying they had learned a lot. Dr. Bennett, in terms of, you said reform is never finished, and you are a fiscal conservative, and you want quality on the return, and you say that you never say less school is better. I'm wondering, what is your stand on House Bill 1309, Education Equity? It's sponsored by Representative Harris and Representative Porter, which established an Office of Educational Equality that will address disproportionality of African-American and other minority students suspension in and out of school and dropout and education and increasing the graduation rate, as well as the Department of Education compiling information on this and reporting to the public.
Well, it's
your stand on
well,
that?
Well, it's first of all, Reverend Day, it's a great question because yesterday, I think it was yesterday, and I may have my days mixed up, one of our staff members, whose name I don't know why I always mention Gary Green's name on this show, but Gary Green met with Carol King from the NAACP about the issue of disproportionality and the data, the exact data that you're asking for. And I think one of the things that we struggle with, Reverend Day, and this is a discussion I would love to have with Representative Harris and Representative Porter, who both I have a great deal of respect for, is it is one thing if we're going to pass a piece of legislation that has something in it, but it's quite another if we're going to pass a piece of legislation that has something in it that has teeth in it for enforcement. And my concern to date has been the enforcement of exactly what you're talking about happens at the local level. And that's one of the things I think Mr. Green had a conversation with Carol about this week, is the need for the NAACP, as it pertains to disproportionality, to really address local school boards and schools. Because we, at this point in time, and I'm not sure, because I don't have the bill sitting in front of me, so Reverend Dad, I ask that you kind of forgive me for not having the exact bill language in front of me, but we don't have the authority. What are the consequences when schools don't meet certain standards? And I think that is another part of this discussion that I am, just as I mentioned being a fiscal conservative, I'm a guy that believes that you don't do things unless there's accountability attached, unless there is some consequence for not following what we're supposed to do. I want to have that conversation, but for me to say I support just having that office, I don't want an office in the State House or in the Department of Education that has no authority and there are no consequences for school districts if they don't produce. And I think that is something that's very important to us.
That can be written into the bill to have some authority to enforce simply by saying it shall be done instead of saying it may be done.
In
mind, you said if it had some authority, so then it sounds like if this bill could be amended, it would be written in that will give that would hold the school system responsible from the state level. You know, of course, within the Constitution of the State of Indiana, and this should be something that you should be supporting.
I do. Now, let me take you to the next step, because you're right. There is language of shall versus may, but what happens if they don't meet shall? Do we withhold state funding? To me, though, when I talk about consequences, consequences are much like our school accountability. If certain minimum standards are not met, then this happens. And so it goes even beyond your point of shall versus may. It becomes a discussion of if you are not successful doing these things, right, what are the consequences to your local school district or your local school?
And you're better to answer that to me, being the over the state school system. What consequences that can be implemented into this bill? I'm sure you know many that could be implemented in these bills, because if we really, and you say that, I attended your town hall meetings around this, many, many schools around here, Arlington, Manual, different ones, and you're talking about accountability, which is good. And it seemed like this bill could support this with the accountability minute in there. If we are really, really serious about the disproportionate of African Americans and other minority kids who are not graduating, who are disproportionately suspended, who are disproportionate in special education. And, I work closely with Carol Craig with this. I had a conflict. I couldn't attend the meeting yesterday. But it's been like pulling teeth without anesthesia to try to get this information that I think the public deserve to have.
And again, you won't find any disagreement here, because first of all, every bit of this information at the local level should be available. You know, when I worked in New Albany, Floyd County Schools, we had a very, very involved equity. I'll use the phrase committee. I don't necessarily like that, because it doesn't. It was much more substantial than that. And we actually drilled into that data at the local level every year with the superintendent. You know, we had representatives of our minority communities, and we drilled into that exact data that we at the local level had. And we kept it, and we had to answer to it, to our local community.
But it seems to me now, with two official state counts, which ties your money, you require school systems to provide certain specific information across, drawn certain timelines during the course of a school year. And if they don't provide that, something happens to that district. Something, you might take a dollar away, something happens. It would seem to me there's similar things. Anyway, it's a good point. And just tell them to reintroduce that bill in the new legislature. And then maybe get the superintendent's support. Let me move on to Gerald at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, yeah, praise the Lord.
Fine.
I have I want to first commend the state, whoever's in charge of the education in the state of Indiana. Yeah. I want to commend him for taking over the IPS system. The schools were failing. I have two children that go to Howe High School. I read in the paper last week where they're saying feel like they have a whole lot of problems at their school. I'm at that school at least twice a week, and I commend the people at that school who are trying to do the work, because IPS left that school in disarray. They left that school where kids thought they could do what they want to do, when they want to do, just how they want to do, and be disrespectful to all the teachers. The staff they have over there now, they're trying to make sure that the kids respect the teachers, not only respect the people, but respect themselves. I was over there when they had the incident at the football game where they had the incident where some people was fighting. I got attacked that same night at the football field.
You got attacked at the fight at the Howe football game?
That's right. I got attacked because I was trying to break up some girls from fighting my daughter and the kid. Some child took.
Hello, Gerald?
Yes, I'm still here.
All right, your phone kind of dropped out here a little bit.
But Gerald, first of all, Birds, thank you for your very encouraging words. I want to just say for a moment, you know, you're talking to the guy who made, you know, I know I'm on here today as the candidate for state superintendent. And, you know, I have a lot of folks around me who wondered, you know, why would we take such a bold action, you know, 100 days before an election and do something the state's never done, which is take over schools, knowing that that's a pretty tenuous decision. But I have to tell you, Gerald, we know that that is not a perfect science, what we're doing at Howe and Arlington and Manuel and Emma Donnan and Roosevelt up in Gary. But I have to tell you, I have taken people through those schools who didn't have any relationship with the Department of Ed, the kind of outsiders, just to get a kind of an objective point of view. And I have to tell you, I am encouraged by what I am seeing and hearing in those schools. Do we have work to do? Yes, we do. But you know what? I think we had to take a stand on doing what we believed and what I believe was right for the children in those schools. And I applaud you for supporting the work of those schools and those school communities. It is really what is needed for schools to truly turn around, which is community and parent engagement. And I thank you for that.
Thank you, Gerald.
The reason I say that because, I had lost my job, so they gave me more leeway to go into schools and see just what was going on. I had been in a school before you took it over and turned it to a trust school. I had been in a school where the teachers would be down in the gym and the kids would be in the room all by themselves. You know, I have seen this for myself, and you know, that's one reason why the kids just really just say, well, you know, hey, the teachers don't care. Well, we don't care. You know, and I've seen the difference in the change. I go over to Howe. I was over there this morning. I go over there constantly. I'm over there. You know, I'm also like a parent dad over in their school. So the principal, he knows me by name. Because I go and I see kids and I see them, they want them to have their belts on, pants tucked in, pants pulled up. Be being respectful, not running the hall. At first, it was kind of wild because the kids was used to just doing their own thing.
Right.
So, but these teachers and administrators over at Howell, hey, they working with the kids. They letting the kids know this is not a tolerated no more. You're going to straighten up. You got that parents and everybody walking the halls. The halls is clear. The kids is in the classroom. They don't get passed just to go
Gerald, you're on a roll, but I got to ask the superintendent, in terms of that, are you satisfied now that Charter Schools USA has a handle on the situation at Howe, as well as Manuel and Emma Donna?
The short answer is, Amos, I am not satisfied. I am pleased.
Mm-hmm.
Satisfied means I think all those schools are exactly where they should be. And I think to say that after 6 consecutive years of failure and the systemic failure that we saw in those schools, to think that we have it magically turned around in 8 weeks, I think that would be pretty naive for me to say. So I have to tell you, while we are pleased with the direction they're moving, we have a long way to go before we return those schools to this type of schools that those children deserve.
Is that the same situation with Ed Power in Arlington?
I do want to say this in fairness. Emma Donnan and Manuel and Arlington did get a head start on Howe.
Mm-hmm.
I think we heard Gerald say that there were some operational issues in Howe at the beginning of the school year. But again, I have to tell you, I am pleased that we have the tenacity, that we have the passion in those schools to truly return those schools to the proud learning institutions they once were.
239-1310, 239-1310, South News News. We're talking live with the Superintendent of Public Instruction of the great state of Indiana, talking about education. All right, welcome back with Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dr. Tony Bennett, back to the phones. And Robert, hi there. Oh, there we go. There, Robert, there we go.
Mr. Bennett, Superintendent of State Education, that how would he shape the agency, the education agency, to protect the rights of special education kids and also be more responsive to to the parents and them getting the information that would affect that children within that system.
First, just so you know, Robert, this is probably one of the things that you could ask that I have not only a great deal of professional interest in, but personal interest, because a lot of folks don't know this, but of my 4 children, I have a special needs child who is now an adult, who actually went through our public school system as a special needs student. And I'm very proud of the fact that in December she will receive her degree as a registered nurse. So I have actually navigated the system, Robert, as a parent, as well as a school administrator and now a state superintendent. I think, first of all, let me start by kind of starting at the highest level. And that is when No Child Left Behind, and I think we're going to see the IDEA, the federal laws, reauthorized in 2013. They're both up for reauthorization. And I hope that Congress gets to those and we end the gridlock in Washington, D.C. I think when that happens, you will see the State Board of Education open up what is the state's regulations around special ed, which is called Article 7. And we will open that up and begin a very large discussion about making sure that we're coordinated. But let me say this, Robert. I think the most important thing we've done in education, and we have not gone nearly far enough, and again, I'll use my little Katie as an example, is when I first started teaching and when I was a student, and I'm sure I'm going to make an assumption that probably isn't correct, but we may be not too far from different ages. We probably didn't think that all kids could learn.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 20 to 25 years, I think now education does overall believe all kids can learn. But I'm not sure we've made that leap to where you're talking about, Robert, that all kids can learn at a high level.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I'm trying to lead into, because back in my day, there was no such thing as a kid couldn't learn. If the environment was right and the teacher took the time and the patience to try and teach that child, then he could he or she could work at their maximum ability.
And Robert, I think one of the things that we've done, and we're, again, I want to give credit where credit's due here. I think we are really trying very hard to readdress this, because I think we went through a period of time where we had a lower set of expectations for children with special needs than we had for our general education population. And you know what? I'm going to go back to what Reverend Day talked about earlier, be it students with special needs, be it students of disadvantage, who are disadvantaged socioeconomically, be it our minority students. I think the most inhumane and immoral thing we can do is look at a child and just by looking at them say, you're not going to attain at the as high a level. You know, and I'll use my triplets. Tony and Tricia were general ed students and Katie was a special ed student. Think of how, you know, inhumane it would be to Katie to look at her and say, well, you know, Katie, you have a learning disability, honey. You're never going to be a registered nurse. Now, Tony will get his degree in finance and Trisha will become a school teacher. But you know what? We really don't think you should be trying to become a nurse because you're not capable.
That's one thing that is de-emphasizing motivation. If the environment, I go back to the environment, if the environment and the participation between parents in the system, if they are compatible, then the child can definitely learn. Because I think that back in the 50s, which I'm in my mid 70s, that it wasn't you just didn't see too much special education. You were in, and the teachers there were very compassionate. And they were motivated because they would tell you in a minute right. That you are a reflection of them. And so they tried to put the best product out that they possibly could.
All right, good points. I need to move on. Let me go to Brenda.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you. Let me go to Brenda at 239-1310. Hi there.
How are you doing, Amos?
Fine.
Hello to the superintendent.
Good. Well, thank you. Good talking to you this morning. This afternoon. I keep saying this morning, Amos, because you brighten my day.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Brenda.
Mr. Bennett, I'm sitting here trying to even believe that I can believe what you've had two gentlemen that called you and talked to you. One talked to you about House Bill 1309.
Yes. Brenda, you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Brenda.
Go ahead, Brenda.
Okay. Miss Reverend Harris, Reverend Day spoke about education policy, equity, and disproportionality. And then here comes Robert talking about the same thing. Now, Mr. Bennett, I've spoken to Gary Green at the Indiana State Department of Education. I know he's over the venue of disproportionality. Now, we need to be open and honest about racial discrimination in our schools here in Indiana. We need to speak openly about white supremacy in our educational system. And if we honestly cannot talk about these issues that are on the table, we wouldn't need a House Bill 1309. Now, we need to call it for what it is. I reached out to you, Mr. Bennett, when you was in New Albany, Indiana, and you slapped my hand and you didn't even respond to me. I have a certified letter. I reached out to you because I was in the New Albany Floyd County School District. What we are talking about, Mr. Bennett, is education neglect. I thought it was racial discrimination, but it isn't racial discrimination. It's education neglect of children with special needs. And that is what you are practicing, and that's what Superintendent Swellen Reed practiced when I reached out to get her help, and she slapped my hand back again. So you need to be honest about what's really going on in education, and you need to come up with that data that supports the hardships that these black children are facing in our educational system, dealing with white school psychologists, white directors of special education, and white staff that care nothing about our children. You need to be honest with that, and you are not being honest. I'm a parent who has been victimized By the school system from New Albany.
All right. Hold on, Brenda. I get that. Let me let the superintendent respond.
Well, Brenda, I think you're right. I don't remember our interaction in New Albany, Floyd. I'm not doubting that you had it at all. But you know, I think one of the things that virtually everyone who comes into my office or anyone who talks to me would say is we have held the line on making sure all children, and I want to emphasize all children in Indiana, get the opportunity for a quality education. And we have stood for that since the day we walked into office. And frankly, you know, I can't do anything but apologize if we have not lived up to what you believe we should do. But I will tell you that there is nothing I take any more seriously than trying to make sure every child, regardless of their race, regardless of their family circumstances, have the opportunities that my children had or, you know, I had as a child growing up, regardless of their race and regardless of their economic situation.
Let me follow up on that, Superintendent. You know, in these issues of equity, and people are holding you accountable as the superintendent of public instruction for the state, but there's 300 individual school corporations and maybe 50 to 60 now charter schools, each of whom set policy. At what point is the boards of a charter school and the elected school boards of school corporations responsible for some of these issues?
Well, Amos,
don't they hold responsibility?
Amos, actually, and I should say thank you. Because one of the biggest issues we have as a state department of education is always that balance of what the state's authority is versus the authority that falls under the purview of local control. And as you mentioned, most of these issues should be dealt with at the local level. And local school boards, local superintendents, local principals are ultimately accountable for these types of issues in their school district. You and I were talking off air. We have school districts in the state that can barely, if even in maybe a couple of instances, can't pay their bills, and there is no statutory authority for the state to step in because of local control. So
is that what you meant in your state of education speech earlier this week, that the state ought to have the right to intervene? Is it intervening for academic reasons or intervening for economic reasons or all of the above?
It could be all of the above, Amos, because, you know, I would stand up for, you know, let's paint the worst case. And I'm not saying this is happening anywhere, but let's paint the worst case. Let's say that a district somewhere started bouncing payroll checks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that fair to those teachers who are providing services to our children?
No, especially when the state is paying the bills.
But there is no statutory authority for us to deal with that. So I think is it fair for districts to chronically fail?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that for me is I don't believe local control gives anyone the right to deprive children of their education. I don't believe that adults sitting at a school board table just so we can say they have local control. I think local control means quality. I think, you know, we shouldn't sit here and always say it's all about local control, it's all about local control, it's all about local control, when local control is really not doing the job for the children of our state.
239-1310, 239-1310, Sats News Names. We'll take a break. We'll be back with Dr. Tony Bennett, Superintendent of Public Instruction, running for re-election. More after these. Back to the phones and Anonymous. Hi there.
Hello. I'm a concerned grandmother. And I'm calling about my grandson. He's in high school.
Okay.
And he's in special ed.
Mm-hmm.
And when he sees case manager, they told him that he would not be able to get a Core 40 diploma. He could only get a certificate. And he's just in the ninth grade. And I don't understand.
Hold it. Stop. He's a freshman now. He's a freshman this year?
Yes.
He's a freshman.
This year, yes.
He just started high school, correct?
Right, but he's in special ed.
It doesn't matter. Does he have, is he under an individualized education plan?
I'm not sure. I called the school.
No.
Didn't give me no information.
I'm getting ready to give you the information. Then I'm going to let Superintendent of Public Instruction let me know whether I'm right or wrong. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
One, under the, if he is in special ed, he is under an individual education plan. It's called an IEP.
Mm-hmm.
And that is developed by the parents, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, auntie, mm-hmm. uncle, all sit in the room with the teachers and the special ed folks and everybody at the school and develop
right.
the plan. And the plan should be how this child is to be educated. Now,
yes.
let me ask you this. When he was in middle school, how were his grades?
He was in special aid, but listen to me.
Did he get what kind of grades did he get? A's, B's, C's?
He got A's and B's.
Okay, when he
even
took
got a GPA of 3.0.
Okay, when he took I-STEP, did he pass?
No, I don't think he took the I-STEP.
No. Hold it. Is he, when you say special ed, does he have any physical disabilities?
No, it's a learning disability.
Okay. So if he's special ed, he's allowed to take I-STEP. You're telling me that he was in seventh and eighth grade and didn't take I-STEP?
If he did, evidently he took it and passed it.
That's good news. Now. What you all do, do you and mom and dad and everybody feel this young man has the capability of earning a Core 40 diploma, which is 4 years of, what is it, Superintendent, 4 years of English, 4 years of math, 40 credits? Do you think he can hang and do that in 4 or 4.5 years?
Yes, because as long as we work with him and he works for us, and that's what we told him.
Then what you do is you all call a case conference.
They had the plan, and the plan was that he would just get a certificate.
And you all signed that?
Well, my daughter was there. I wasn't there.
And she signed that?
She said that they are right because of his learning disability.
Let me let the superintendent of public, I'm getting ready to go off on this school. Superintendent.
Amos, this goes right to the heart of what Robert called about earlier. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to be judgmental because, frankly, I don't know your grandson's particular circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just going to kind of go on what you said. If your grandson was able to pass the I-STEP, and because he has a learning disability, we've determined that he can only receive a certificate of completion. It goes to the exact heart of what was being called, what the caller spoke of earlier, which is, are we lowering our expectations because your grandson has a learning disability? And I think what the advice Amos is giving you is exactly the right advice. You know, if I were confronted in that situation, and again, having a daughter who had a learning disability, we were very fortunate that, her mom, my wife Tina, she was adamant that Katie would be just like her brother and sister and have the same opportunity. So I am right there with Amos. Amos's advice is spot on. I would counsel your daughter to have another discussion.
Okay, I will do that
because
they won't give me no information because I called the school myself.
No, they're not supposed to.
Grandmother. Well, they said they couldn't give me no information.
Well, hold on a second. Do you and your daughter get along?
Yes, we get along very well.
All right. Then you tell your daughter to set up another case conference.
Okay.
And case conferences can be set up at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mom goes. If there's a dad in the family, dad needs to show up.
Mm-hmm.
You need to show up. If there's a grandpa involved, he needs to show up.
Okay.
And ma'am, there are also advocacy agencies that will also assist you with these types of things.
And what district is this? What school is this?
Washington Township.
See, you as the parent and the family simply says you want a plan where this young man can get a Core 40.
Yes.
And there's benchmarks as he goes along to see how he gets that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's things they can do in terms of extra help and support to achieve the goal. If the goal ought to be Core 40.
Yeah, because me and my daughter's working with him at home now and told him to bring home extra work every day. Whatever they give from his school, bring it home extra so we can help him get to that level.
I want to ask you this. Since they've already gone through the first, not the first formal grade period, but like the mid part, how are his grades?
He got A's and B's on the first report in high school.
At North Central?
North Central.
With this disability of special ed?
Yes.
And he's in like real classes?
He's in real class, but they come, like he have a hard time in English and reading.
Okay.
So they'll come and get him out of the classes for him to go to, you know, reading. And
absolutely. Reading. That's part of the plan. I would be really amazed why North Central would want to have him on a certificate of completion, because they're wasting their time. He needs to be on it at minimum, general diploma, but the goal ought to be core 40. You got it?
Right,
So this weekend, you and your daughter sit down and strategize.
Okay.
Y'all need to do like Peyton Manning, strategize. Do like Peyton Manning, Luck, and Reggie Wayne. Get your strategy together, all right?
Okay.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
But this comes back, Superintendent, and I've mentioned it now to a number of the candidates running for the legislature, why don't we have Bill of Rights? For parents, a bill of rights and responsibilities, so that parent can understand that a goal ought to be, you know, with every child, you got a responsibility to get them in school, get them ready for school, da 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 da. School, your responsibility, among other things, is to let parents know their rights to make sure that their child can get a quality education.
Well, Amos, let me. Add something here. I've had to sit in. I have not had to. I sat in on many case conferences with Katie, my daughter, and I sat in on many case conferences with, you know, students,
right,
with their parents. And I think one of the first things we did was went through the rights parents have under special education laws. And I mean, it is almost as you describe it, a list of their rights. As parents.
And I understand privacy rules in schools, but it would seem to me that schools ought to reach out and say, Mom, you know, who else is involved in this family, so that when grandma calls up, they don't think grandma's trying to run, you know, a number on them. They're part of the team. Anyway, 239, let me go back to the phones. Reverend Phillips, right quick. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, Amos?
I'm fine, sir. What's up?
Glad to be back in Indianapolis. Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a question.
Yeah.
I hear what Superintendent Ben is saying, and I heard some comments and stuff, and something's not adding up right. This man, he's a superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
And you gotta come clean with people. If you want people to vote for you, just come clean with yourself. And see, you know, God already blessed you in the office. So now you got to come clean with people. You can't sugarcoat and have people vote for you. And then you do what you ain't going to say you're going to do. So you got to be honest with yourself.
Reverend, I do need to respond to that, because I would say that probably if there has been a criticism that a lot of people have of me, it's the fact is I don't sneak up on anybody. I mean, what we said we would do 4 years ago is exactly what we've done. The policies I sat in this chair as a first time candidate in 2008 are the exact policies that we have tried to pursue and enact, and we've been pretty unashamed about it. And the fact of the matter is, we haven't snuck up on a soul in Indiana, and we've been kind of out front and up front about everything we've done and everything we intend to do. So I would think if you would check most people who work with me and around me, you will find the one thing I'm not really good at, and I think Amos would even attest to this, is I'm not very good at sugarcoating stuff.
All right, Reverend Phillips, let me move on quickly to Ms. B. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Okay. Dr. Bennett, that his name?
That's his name.
Okay. He have came here and demolished IPS system, period. I'm retired from school buses. We got so many prejudiced principals, so many prejudiced teachers in these schools. They don't like blacks. But how can they teach our kids? And I don't understand why he's selling these schools off to different people when he could have come here and straightened out IPS schools that's already here.
What would you have wanted him to do?
I want him to get off the board because he's not doing anything but messing up with black kids. He don't care about these black children. All he say he does, but he don't. Because if he did, he wouldn't let things be selling these schools. And I might as well sell the kids on the corner the way he's doing it. And we got black people that's helping him. And that's what makes it bad. Bye. Thank you.
All right. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons. The name is this. Is this vote in Marion County in general, since most of these educational changes in the last 4 years have impacted here in Marion County? This county has the most charter schools. This county had the most schools under takeover. What happens if the voters in Marion County, because this is not just going to be parents and grandparents who's got their kids in school, this is, you know, voters, taxpayers, what have you. What happens if you lose Marion County in a landslide or with a wide margin or even within the IPS area that you lose widely? Is that a referendum from the voters here on how they think you've done?
You know, Amos, I have to tell you, you asked me a question that I'm not even sure I have the answer to. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Reverend Phillips said, don't sugarcoat anything. One thing I would tell you is that I have not spent a lot of time thinking about this election. Mm-hmm. I just don't do that. I mean, I still do not think of myself as the candidate. I until January, whatever the day is. Win or lose, I'm going to be the state superintendent of public instruction. So I got to tell you, in terms of trying to analyze the political landscape, I spend very little time trying to do that because I think when I start thinking about those kinds of things, that gets in the way of what I should be thinking about. And those are the policies I believe that are best for Indiana children and Indianapolis children. So I guess if we wake up on November 7th and we see those numbers, I think maybe then we'll take a look at them. But right now, I tend not to think about those things.
Let me go to Charles right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Amos, just got a problem with the way the system is run. The Bill of Rights that you were saying, we've got a problem with the hatefulness and the nastiness of teachers in these buildings. When you get a majority of white teachers in a building, they have a tendency to treat us black folks, including the other black staff and the children, as though they were invisible. They treat them nasty. And it's been going on for a lot of years. When I worked in the system, even back in the 80s, I used to notice that it was like, well, there's nothing I can do about that. How can you make a white person look at you and acknowledge the fact that he sees you, and can he at least nod his head or just acknowledge the fact that you exist, that you're standing in front of him?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, at an elevator, you go to walk to the elevators and the white people just, they look at the floor, they look at the elevator door, but they won't even turn around and acknowledge the fact that you are present. Well, they treat our kids like that in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
That's why our kids have the kinds of attitudes that they have about school and these teachers. There are too many white teachers, and if we could, the Bill of Rights, if we could make these building administrators say, you have got to turn your head to these children and make eye contact and speak to them. Speak to your colleagues, the black and Hispanic colleagues. Speak to them. Acknowledge the fact that you see them. They are not invisible.
Let me let the, you made a point. Let me let the superintendent respond. You have talked in this first 4 years mm-hmm. about evaluating teachers and in getting the, you know, rewarding the great teachers and weeding out the teachers that aren't so great.
Sure.
Yet the key to any great school is the quality of the leader of that school. If you're reelected, is there going to be a focus on the quality of the leader of the school?
You know, Amos, actually, the law that required teacher evaluations also requires principal evaluations. And I think what we see statewide is with when we release the school letter grades on October 10th, mm-hmm. and the state board votes on those, I think you're going to really see some very vigorous discussions around our state and school districts about school leadership. And you know what? It's about time.
Shouldn't.
If you don't mind, I have to say this. First of all, what the last caller, and I'm sorry I missed your name.
Charles.
Charles, I guess when you speak of those things going on, I have to tell you first, it's just counter to the way I was brought up, because I was not brought up with a silver spoon in my mouth. My dad was a simple union electrician, and my mom worked in a bank, and they worked very hard to give my sister and me what we needed to have. And I'll tell you, and I would almost invite you to do this, walk into the State House and ask any employee of the State House, and you will find no one who will tell you that I don't speak to them. Because that to me is just, that has, I don't mean to, I'm not being argumentative with what you said, Charles. The fact is, I don't think that's just education. That's basic human, to me, that's just being a good person.
Well, in evaluations, where does cultural competency come in? And not just racial cultural competency. If you bring some school leader in from the big city and he's hired in a rural school district, he's got to understand how to deal with the cultural competency of small towns.
And Amos, I know we're running short, and I don't want to get too windy about this issue, but where do we start with cultural competency? And I think the first thing we start with are, what are the results the kids are getting?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first question. Why are the students, I'm going to go back to Reverend Day's mm-hmm. first call. Why are these students not performing as well as these other students? That's the first step. And I congratulate Carol Craig and Diana Daniels, who we meet with the National Council for Educating Black Children and the NAACP regularly. And they have both challenged us to say, you know what, folks talk about cultural competency kind of starting with behaviors. It starts with academic results and then determining why certain students are not getting those results.
Anonymous will be our last caller with Dr. Tony Bennett. Anonymous.
Hello, Amos.
Hi.
I was wondering, what do you do when a child is denied rights to eat, not on one occasion, but two occasions?
He was denied the right to eat lunch in the school?
Breakfast and a snack. During tutoring at the school.
And why was he denied?
She was denied breakfast.
Oh, I'm sorry,
because her morning work wasn't done, and she was denied the snack because the teacher brought it herself.
Just do this, ma'am. if you would, please, off the air, please give Woody your name and phone number, and we will contact you.
Alrighty.
All right, so hold on and give Woody that information. I got one quick question. Is she on free or reduced lunch?
Yes, she is.
Oh, my goodness. All right, I want you to give Woody your name off the air. He's getting ready to pick up the phone, and a phone number where you can be reached during the day, okay?
All right,
thanks. And somebody from the superintendent staff will get back to you.
Thank you, ma'am, and I'm sorry. That believe me, that should not happen.
Right.
All right, so hold on and do that. Superintendent, our standard closing question with all candidates is, if people want more information about your campaign, this is a real test now. It's like I-Step. How do they get a hold of you?
It's TonyBennett2012.com is our website, and that's the easiest way.
Okay, TonyBennett2012.com. 2012.com. And you're telling me the letter grades are coming? See, because this was arranged through the campaign, so I haven't been able to talk to the regular staff. So the letter grade day is Wednesday the 10th?
That's the day the state board will vote. On what we currently do is the state board approves the letter grades, Amos.
Okay.
And so on October the 10th, the state board will approve the letter grade. We're currently in what we refer to as an appeal window, where districts look at their data,
mm-hmm.
say, is the data correct? Is the letter grade we got? Because the schools have their letter grades right now.
Oh.
And they are double-checking those, triple-checking those. We have had ongoing discussions with many. And on October 10th, the state board will approve those letter grades, and they will be released to the public.
Right in the middle of doing interviews with school board members and school board candidates.
That's fortuitous for you, isn't it?
That's fortuitous for the listeners, for the community. He is the superintendent of public instruction, the Republican candidate for re-election. Dr. Tony Bennett, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Always great to be with you, Amos, and I always appreciate your callers.